Hello and welcome to the STEM Untapped podcast. I'm Izzy, your host, and I'm joined by my co-host, Ismini. This episode, we're interviewing Dr. Katrina Jones, a Presidential Fellow and Royal Society University Research Fellow at the University of Manchester. Katrina teaches students and conducts research on earth and environmental sciences, particularly focusing on functional anatomy and the evolution of mammals. So, Dr. Katrina Jones, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
My name is Katrina Jones. I'm a Presidential Fellow and Royal Society University Research Fellow at the University of Manchester. And that's a long way of saying that I'm a scientist that does scientific research. And the research field that I'm interested in is paleobiology and evolutionary biology. So I particularly study the evolution of mammals and their fossil ancestors.
Thank you. Ismini, why did you choose to interview Katrina? And could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
So I picked Katrina because I want to go into zoology or conservation kind of area. And I thought that as she's in paleobiology, it's a kind of similar area of science to us. So, and at the moment I'm studying biology, chemistry and math. So I want to go into zoology at university, and then I'm not entirely sure what afterwards, but something in that field. So it's Monday lunchtime. What has your day involved so far, and what's your average day look like during the week?
Yeah, so I'd say one of the things that's really interesting about a career as a scientist is there really is not just one job, but lots of jobs combined. So you end up wearing many, many hats. So I would say that I don't really have a typical day, except that I do have sort of some common themes. And so today, this morning, I had meetings with students that are working with me, with a PhD student and undergraduate thesis student. And so that's definitely one of the themes, is mentoring and working with young scientists, some of whom are going to be trying to go into research, other of whom are just, you know, in university and could go into any different career.
Do you get to spend time in the lab, or is it more teaching?
Well, this is actually an interesting point. So sort of the career steps of becoming an academic researcher, you might probably are aware it's quite a lengthy career path, and there are several different steps. And one thing that's quite interesting is that each of the career steps is quite different in what your actual day-to-day job is. So it sort of depends what level the person you're speaking to is, what answer you're probably going to get to that question. So if you were talking to a PhD student, then they would say they spent most of their time in a lab working, doing data analysis, you know, basically doing research, and also perhaps taking classes or learning new skills, being trained. If you were to talk to a postdoctoral researcher, so that's someone that has a PhD and who is a researcher but isn't running their own lab yet, they're more of a trainee scientist, you might think of them. They would probably say that they also spent a lot of time doing their own research and a little bit of time sort of managing projects. But then if you speak to someone that's sort of known within science as a PI or a principal investigator, so this is somebody who's actually running a research lab, obtaining funding, working in a university, then they would say that they would spend majority of their time project managing other people's projects, applying for grants, so ensuring the sort of ongoing funding of the lab. And then if you're in a university environment, obviously doing things associated with the universities, so that might be teaching, that might be, you know, meetings associated with the running of the department or the administration of the department. Unfortunately, at my career stage, there isn't a lot of time in my week that's actually dedicated to doing the science itself. More frequently, I'm talking with other people about their science, helping them get the skills or the resources that they need, and also sort of using my sort of bigger, broader perspective to help shape the direction and keep the big questions in mind. Yes, so not so much time in the lab for me now, but yeah.
Yeah, because one of my questions was like, what are you currently researching at the moment? But if you don't have much time at the moment doing it.
Well, so I'm involved with the research. So it's definitely, if you say what I consider them to also be my projects, even though I might not be there actually taking the measurements myself. And so all of science is teamwork, really. So, you know, I'm a member of the team, but my role on the team is more as a facilitator and sort of ideas person at this point. So my research focuses on the evolution of mammals. And so I have quite a number of different projects going on at the moment with different people. My biggest project is funded through the Royal Society, which is a big research funding body here in the UK. And it's looking at the evolution of running behavior in mammals. So if you think of, you know, fast running mammals, that's such an iconic behavior that we think of, and it involves enormous amounts of athletic agility and stamina and adaptations that really you don't see in a lot of different tetrapod groups. Mammals are very, very good at this particular behavior.
Sorry to interrupt. What does tetrapod mean?
Tetrapod means something that has four legs and walks around on land. And so my project is really interested in using this as sort of a case study for understanding evolutionary process, and particularly understanding how interactions between species versus interactions with the environment might drive evolution. So I'm really interested in looking at carnivores, which is kind of meat-eating mammals, and ungulates, which are herbivorous mammals, how they might have co-evolved athletic abilities for running. So, for example, this is often referred to as what's called the Red Queen hypothesis, because in the Alice in Wonderland tale, the Red Queen is running faster and faster only to stay at the same point. And so there's a theory in evolution that where you get different animals or species interacting with each other, you might get an evolutionary arms race, so that one species gets better at something, then the other species gets better, then the other species gets better, so on. And you basically get a runaway selection situation whereby you can evolve these very, very highly specialized types of adaptations. And that's one hypothesis for where we see these sort of extreme adaptations for running in mammals. But another alternative hypothesis is that it actually might be more of an adaptation to environmental change, changing distributions of, for example, grassland savanna environments as climate change throughout the last sort of 30 million years of evolution. And so my goal with the project is to try and understand how we can reconstruct running behavior in fossil mammals, and if we can test this hypothesis of co-evolution through the last approximately 60 million years of mammalian evolutionary history through the fossil record, specifically in North America, where we have a really nice fossil record. So, well, I do appreciate it's a very specific topic, but I think it has broader relevance in the, you know, the overall focus of interest is trying to understand biodiversity. So we have just such remarkable diversity of plants and animals that are, you know, alive today. And I think my field in general strives to try and understand how that's come about, how the sort of selection of organisms that inhabit the planet today, like how they become the way that they are, and why have some species survived and some gone extinct. And I think that's quite relevant also for thinking about the challenges going forward. So you said you study biology at A-level.
Yes.
Do you do evolution as part of the biology A-level?
Yes, I think it is further on in the course, or towards the end of year 12 and start of year 13, I think. So at the moment we're like doing biological molecules and sort of like the foundations of biology, so like parts of the cell and section of
okay.
it. When did your interest in paleobiology first sort of begin?
I have been interested in paleobiology my entire life. Keep this on my desk to kind of remind myself. This is my first ever book. It's a book of dinosaur poems. Here's a little poem that I wrote about pterosaurs. So yeah, I mean, I've just always been really fascinated by the natural world, like animals, plants, fossils. I have to admit, when I was in school, I didn't really think that there was a viable career in this, you know, and so I was thinking more along the lines of going to something like biochemistry or doing something maybe in industry with technology. And then when I started my undergrad degree, I did my undergrad at Cambridge, where unlike most degree programs in the UK, you don't have to specify a particular kind of science. You can just take natural sciences. So you get to study lots of different kinds of science. And so I was pretty convinced I was going to do biochemistry and go and sort of work in industry, basically. But when I got to Cambridge, I got to take lots of different types of science units, and I ended up taking a class in geology, which focuses on the evolution or on the history of Earth as a sort of as a planet and as an environment. I just became fascinated with it and realized I actually didn't really enjoy the sort of molecular scale work that much. Like I didn't enjoy the lab work, so, you know, pipetting clear fluids, and just conceptually, really, I think I've always just been a natural historian without knowing it. Like, I just love the natural world. And I think, like, being in a lab and looking at molecules didn't really, like, satisfy that. I ended up specializing in geology for my undergrad degree, and just also enjoying the fact that with that degree, you spend a lot of time outdoors and you spend a lot of time observing things with your eyes and interacting, touching things, very sort of tactile. And I had an opportunity to do a research project with a new paleobiologist that had just started in the department, who was basically a young female, probably only maybe less than 10 years older than myself at that time, also from a sort of minority background. And before I worked with her, I would never have considered a career in research. But actually, through working with her, you know, it kind of really showed me, you know, anyone can go into research. Most of my professors at that point had been older, white bearded men. So I think it was just, you know, it really changed my whole perspective to work with my master's advisor, and just had such a great time, like, designing my own research and having that independence to pursue a question that I thought was interesting. And so from that, I ended up applying for PhDs in paleobiology and ended up actually going over to the US to do my PhD, and ended up being over there for over a decade and have recently come back. So yeah, so I did, my undergrad was in earth sciences geology. My PhD was in anatomy in a medical school. And then I have also worked in a museum of natural history, and now I'm back in the geology department. So it's very interdisciplinary, sort of a lot of research now, you know, you can't really just put it into one box. You're using skills from many different fields.
So on your course, would you say it was mostly women, or would you say mostly men, or was it roughly equal?
So earth sciences has been traditionally quite a male dominated field. So I'm trying to think, when I was in undergrad, I think there were about 100 students in my year. Maybe it was like 70-30 men to women, something like that would be my guess. Now, anything biology is more female focused. So that sort of flipped once I was doing my PhD and I was in more of a biology field. Now it's a lot better at undergraduate level. It's a lot more 50-50. But I think one of the biggest problems in science is that and in many fields, not just science, as you go up the scale seniority wise, the gender disparities increase pretty steeply. You know, more at the senior levels of scientific research, it is still very strongly male dominated.
You said that your master's advisor was from a minority background. As well as there being lots of men, do people tend to be white in your field?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So I think that these are things that still are getting better. And certainly at the undergrad level, I've noticed a big difference of more women and things. But yeah, at a senior level, it's still quite homogenous.
So I do biology, maths and chemistry, and saying about how biology is more female dominated. It's like, even in my class, there are way more girls in biology than chemistry and maths. I mean, in maths, I'm one of two, and in chemistry, I'm one of three. So
yeah, although even if you were to go and look at like full professors of biology in the UK, I'm sure that there would still be more men, or like Nobel Prize winners in biology or whatever. It doesn't seem to matter how strong the female bias is low down. It always seems to go away as you go up the totem pole. And I do think there are unique challenges for women in a career in science and research, because it's a very unstable career path for a very long time. So usually a PhD takes, you know, 3 to 5 years. And then there's usually 5+ years of sort of short-term contracts type work before you might get a permanent position. And so I think that strongly discouraging for people from alternative backgrounds, and also can be really difficult for women, you know, with like family pressures and stuff like that. So I think creating more stable career paths for people from alternative backgrounds is something that would really, really help.
In your work, do you get to travel with it? Do you get to go to certain sites kind of thing?
Yeah, I get to travel a lot, which is great. I mean, it can be a pro and a con, I guess, depending on your perspective. But no, I really, really enjoy it. So I travel a lot to meet with academics in other countries, for example, that I might be collaborating with, or to visit museums. So a lot of my work involves museum collections. So I have to, you know, travel there to see, you know, examine the specimens that are housed there. Also, a lot of people in my field do go out to do field work. So, you know, digging up bones. I'm not doing that personally at the moment, although I have done in the past. And so, yes, I would say generally being an academic involves a lot of travel. And I think that's great. Although I do think in some circumstances, it can be a little bit challenging if people have commitments, home commitments. Again, it's a way in which maybe the career can be like a little bit less accommodating. Although now with Zoom and online things, I think that is a lot better. For example, now most conferences, there's an online option. So it's not like you're totally missing out on the networking if you're not able to travel there, which I think is really good.
You said about how some people obviously have commitments, you know, family-wise. And how do you have a work-life balance? So do you still, you know, spend time with your family, things like that?
It's really hard. But as an academic, you're almost a bit like an entrepreneur, or like a, you know, almost like running a lab is a little bit like running a business. So if you sort of take a long holiday and don't do anything for a while, you know, it's kind of, there isn't somebody that comes in and replaces you or does that job while you're away. In the same way, if you were in a more of a standard role, someone else would cover your workload while you're away. I think a lot of what you're doing is for your own, you have your own aims and objectives and goals, which I love. Like, oh, I really want to achieve this piece of research. I really want to find out the answer to this question. But you're the one that's in control of making it happen. And so that can make it really hard to sort of step back. You know, there's always deadlines, there's always things coming in. I think you just a little bit have to accept that you can't do everything and that things aren't going to be perfect. I also think that through time, the expectations of academics in terms of the number of different jobs that you're doing and your responsibilities has increased a lot. And so you're really balancing a few different jobs, and trying to figure out how to do that is something. I'm quite new in my role, so I've only been 18 months in this role, and I think I'm definitely still figuring it out. I don't know if you ever get it 100%.
Does your job make you happy?
There are certainly days that I feel frustrated. I think most people would say that. But there are also days where I feel so excited and enthusiastic. I'd say it's very much a roller coaster of a job, whereby, you know, you've just gotten a new piece of data or a new result. And it really is one of the best feelings in the world, I will say that, when you sort of say, oh, that makes sense. Something's fallen into place that you didn't understand before. Or, you know, if for me, something I get so much pleasure out of is just being in museum collections and interacting with museum specimens, you know, getting to observe the remarkable diversity of life firsthand. Yeah, and having those interactions. And so, you know, those are just such highs. But at the same time, you know, there are days when your grants haven't been funded, or you've put a lot of work into something and it's really just not worked out, or, you know, your time's gotten sucked onto something that isn't what you were hoping to be working on. And particularly during the very unstable times in your career, there are definitely lows. You know, you've applied for 30 jobs and you haven't gotten any, and you don't know where you're going to be working next year. Like, that's quite a stressful situation to be in. And so I think if you want to go into a career in science, you have to be a little bit prepared for the roller coaster. So it's not, definitely not for everyone. The highs are what you do it for. And have you had much sort of careers advice about what different jobs are out there?
A little, but I want to go into zoology, which is, everyone's told me, is quite a difficult area to go into because it's quite unstable. There aren't many careers going into it, so something to think about. But
I would also say just because you do a degree in zoology doesn't mean you can still keep deciding what you want your career to be. You'll have great numerical skills and problem-solving skills and other transferable skills with a degree in zoology. So, but I would say any kind of computational or quantitative skills you can pick up. Most of my job, even though I'm a biologist, most of my research involves quantitative and computational skills, a lot of computer programming, although you wouldn't think it's coding is a key part of my job. So any of those skills are transferable to so many different fields. Yeah, I would also say it's a balance. Any job is a balance between, you know, your passion for what you're doing and also the lifestyle that you want to have. And so thinking about those two aspects, like, do you want to travel a lot or do you want to be on a very defined career track where you know that by a certain age you'll be at a certain point? Or do you want a bit more of an adventure where you might be able to go into lots of different roles, but you might not be, you know, at the final destination straight away? So there are lots of different things to think about.
Definitely, there's lots of things to think about. And I think, so I want to obviously go into zoology. So, and now because climate change is, you know, very prevalent, it's a big issue that I think as when I get to that stage, I think there will be a lot more opportunities available in that kind of area.
Can you recommend any resources for Ismini and our listeners?
So I've been involved with a YouTube channel called The Brain Scoop. And so actually, if you really want to see what I do, I have a video out there. So a lot of what I do is actually understanding anatomy. So I worked with The Brain Scoop, which is based in the Field Museum of Natural History in Chicago. And it's a natural history research podcast. And we did a dissection, a mammal dissection. And there's also a lot of other great content on there for anyone that's interested in natural history. Good luck. And,
Thank you. I
really hope that you enjoy your future zoology education and enjoy every step as you go, I guess is my final advice. You know, even if you don't end up staying in zoology, for me, just learning about the amazing biodiversity that we have on this planet has been such a transformative thing in my life that I will always appreciate. And so enjoy that.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the STEM Untapped podcast. If you liked this episode, you can subscribe for free on your podcast app. You can also find more from us on Instagram at STEM Untapped and our website untappedinnovation.com/STEM-untapped. See you next time.